and welcome to Bad Ash Outdoors, the podcast. My name's Ashley, and I am the Ash of Bad Ash Outdoors, which is, well, a brand that was born from my humble beginnings as a steelhead guide to pay for books in college. Kind of ended up being a fun name for my business. A little bit about me. I'm a member of the Quinault Indian Nation. I'm a sports fisherwoman. I was raised pretty much outside. A lot of friends taught me how to go fishing. I was kind of raised by the outdoor industry and fishermen and people that were willing to take a kid and show them a thing or two about playing outside. And I do this podcast because when people give you the tools to enrich your life as an outdoorsy person, what you then do to that is you pass it along to others. So if I can encourage you to go outside, trick a fish, keep you entertained while you're dealing with home quarantine at the time being, or otherwise, I guess, go outside and play at some point, I will consider my job done. That's the entire point of the podcast, is talk about the experience of playing outside, fishing, hunting, and then hopefully giving you some of the resources to do it yourself. Today's podcast is going to be fun. It was kind of an idea that I've had for a while, and now that I am home and unable to go work, and the other work that I do is from home, I thought this would be a great time to do this podcast. So today's podcast is going to be about fishing stories. So wherever you are, I encourage you to gather around the campfire or your morning cup of coffee or curl up on the couch if you're hanging out at home and listen to times of old when we can go out and fish with people and they did funny things and that was both legal and encouraged. It is not right now. But we'll talk about times where it was and when it can be again in the future. So I have collected a whole bunch of stories from folks that follow my Bad Ash Outdoors Facebook page, and I've always said to them that they are the funniest people. It doesn't matter what I post, whether it's funny in nature or not. The responses from these folks are always hilarious. I have the best outdoor social media community like that there is, and they did not disappoint. So I asked, hey, post a funny fishing story, and I would love to talk a little bit about it on my podcast. I don't even think I told them what I was going to do with it. I just said I was going to do something, or I had a project, and of course, they were like, yeah, this seems legit. I'm in. So I have an accumulation of a lot of those stories, and I have one from my brother who kindly wrote up a little story and sent it to me. Also on this podcast, I dub the King Salmon of the Week. I've got a pretty good one to share with you this week. And going forward, the storytelling piece of the podcast could be a little segment that I do every week. So if you have stories in mind that, you know, maybe come to mind once you hear somebody else's or you want to share that, please go on to Bad Ash Outdoors Facebook page, shoot me a message. You can email me ash@badashfishing.com, and I will put all of that information into the description of today's podcast so you can check it out there. But I would love to hear these stories. Sharing fishing stories is like one of the best parts of being a fisher or an outdoors person, is all of the stories and shenanigans that you get to share because the shenanigans ensue out on the river, in the woods, etc. So let's go ahead and dive into the first fishing story. Now, some of these are heartfelt, some of these are funny in nature, and some of them I've already read, and some of them I have not read. So I'm going to start with one by a friend named David H., and he shared this story with me about fishing with his kids. So his story is, everyone has heard about the sandwich fish, the fish that you hook while eating your sandwich. And I have to say, this is definitely true. The best way to catch a fish is to stop paying attention to fishing and start doing anything else, but definitely making sandwiches. So the story continues. Summer salmon fishing, my son hooks a nice Chinook while eating his sandwich. Classic. I explained to him the theory behind the sandwich bite. The next day, he decides to eat his sleeping sister's sandwich instead of his, testing my theory. Needless to say, it didn't work, and my daughter woke up and wanted her sandwich. The next day, she wanted to nap but did not trust her brother and fell asleep with her sandwich in her possession. And with it, he sends a photo of his daughter with her life jacket, buckled all the way up, head on a pillow, in the boat seat, blanket, and her arm clutching the sandwich. It's in like a like one of those like to-go boxes, and she's just like has it tucked in tight under her arm. And thank you, David, for letting me share this story, because for one, I very much can relate to the sandwich bite. I cannot tell you how many times I've been on anchor in my boat. I've put the cooker up, and something about having like something hot that also requires your attention is pretty fun. So, what you know, I have like a camp cooking stove and it, you know, a little propane tank that I you know, zip up to it. And I usually get some, you know, bratwursts going or hamburgers or something else. And as soon as it gets hot enough to where you need to pay attention, otherwise something's going to burn, is when either a rod goes off or something happens, a fish is on. Otherwise, I'd like to be on anchor and fishing while I'm cooking. So usually once I have that set up and there's a lot of things that you can easily knock over or burn, that's when you have a fish on. I'm not complaining, for the record. I'm not complaining. I welcome the fish bite anytime I'm cooking lunch. And like David said, nonetheless, if you start eating a sandwich, fish on. But I love that the theory was tested on little sister's sandwich. This is pretty good stuff. So thanks, David, for sharing that story. Next story is from Cody B. Thank you for sharing your story, Cody. His story is, I went fishing with my cousin and my buddy in my cousin's boat. My cousin told my buddy to plug in the boat, so we launched into our spot, and when I started baiting the hooks, I realized water was coming in the boat. And I understand that shocked feeling. Got back in the launch, loaded the boat, and realized my buddy put the plug on the intake for the live well, and then it has the facepalm emoji. We drained the water out, I put the plug in its home, and we went back out and had a hell of a day sturgeon fishing. We boated about 20 undersizers, he's talking about sturgeon, folks, that day, and was lucky enough to get two keepers, a memory I won't soon forget. And he sent a picture of he and his cousin with the two keepers. And I cannot tell you how many times I have either like laughed at somebody else's expense because of the plug situation, or have had it happen myself. So Cody B, I understand the kind of like adrenaline and fear that sets in once you realize the plug isn't in the boat, but you're out in the water. And it's always, you know, intense in the moment, but fun to look back and laugh on. So thanks for sharing that. If any of you have been in my boat with me on a guided trip, you know that one thing I always say when you get in the boat is that there are two plugs in the back. And because of where they're sitting, sometimes if the person in the back of the drift boat like keeps their feet off to the side of the seat, like if they're casting off towards the bank or something, it's easy to put your foot on where the plug goes in my boat and you can kick it out. I mean, if you step on it, and like, it's not easy to do, but it's possible. And so I always warn people now, but the reason why I warn people is because it's also happened to me. I had somebody accidentally kick a plug out of the boat. And as I'm rowing really hard, trying to keep us, you know, in the wind and in this, you know, certain section of the river as we're drifting down, we're fishing, the fishing's good. And I noticed that, man, it's getting a lot harder to like kick my boat over. And so I'm pulling and pulling on the oars. And then I feel everything start to lean over to one side. And I look, it was raining too. And so seeing water in the boat wasn't insane. So, you know, the boat's all leaning over and I look down and there's a lot of water, and I look behind me and my dear friend is, you know, fishing and just whistling to himself and, you know, enjoying the scenery and watching the floats go by, and there's water just shooting out from between his legs. And it was just this equal mix of this is going to be funny later, but is terrifying now, and should probably get to the bank before we lose everything. And thank goodness I did. It's funny now in the moment. Like, I was so like tense over pulling on the oars and getting the boat to the bank that like I had tears welled up in my eyes, like, and everything. Like, it's such an intense moment, but afterwards it's nice to look back and laugh. So thanks, Cody B, for sharing that. And I'm glad that the end of the day was a good ending. It was 20 undersized sturgeon and then two keepers. You guys got to fish, nothing was lost. So yeah, I count that as a good one. And then next up, I have a story from Carrie Lynn Smith. And I have known Carrie Lynn Smith for 7 years? 6, 7 years? She's one of the first like other female fishing gals that I've like ran into regularly on the river. And this chick is so amazing. Like, if you don't follow Carrie Lynn Smith on Facebook, I certainly recommend it. And on Instagram, the information, the photos that she shares, like all of her experiences are incredible. So check her out, Carrie Lynn Smith on Facebook and Instagram. And her story is, I wish I had photos from this day, but I don't even think I had a cell phone yet. You just dated yourself, my friend. You just dated yourself, but you did this, not me. July 2004, we bought our first drift boat as a graduation present. We were floating Blue Creek down by the wall on July 4th, my first ever trip to the Cowlitz, and my mind was blown by the amount of people fishing everywhere. It was also my very first steelhead trip. Wow. 4th of July steelhead trip on the Cowlitz at Blue Creek? That's not a bad place to go for your first steelhead trip. Good job, Derek, which I assume is who took you. We parked the boat on the inside corner, and after a few casts and getting yelled at by other fishermen for tangled lines, I was ready to give up. I decided to make another cast anyways, and to my excitement, there was finally a fish on my line. This girl was so spunky and doing cartwheels everywhere in the air. We were so close to finally landing it. Everyone was actually rooting for me at this point. She takes off, I go to reel down, and my reel falls apart in my hand. Seriously, could this get any worse? And then emoji, I think it's the facepalm emoji or the hands up in the air emoji, one of those. So here we are now running up and down the bank with a fish on like crazy people with a rod and a broken reel, now hand lining the fish in. After about 25 minutes, we finally landed her. My first steelhead, my first drift boat trip, and my first time steelhead fishing. Here we are 16 years later, and that is still my favorite day fishing. Carrie, this story makes me smile. I actually did. I just decided not to read it, like pre-read it before, because I wanted to read it as I was recording the podcast. This is honestly your first steelheading trip. For one, catching a steelhead on your first steelheading trip is not something that happens to everybody. I would say the majority don't catch a steelhead on their very first steelheading trip. And to have everything going wrong, but to still claim your prize, that is some good stuff. Thank you so much for sharing that story. And if I know you, and I think I know enough to say, you've caught enough fish, you've caught enough steelhead in particular to have probably 1,000 different steelhead stories. And for that first one to still be your very favorite one, it's good stuff. Thanks again for sharing. Okay, and let's see. I have two more stories. This one is from Patrick, and I have not read this yet. So we'll see. I don't know why, Patrick S., you know that you're one of my favorite people in the world, but for some reason I'm a little scared to read this without pre-reading it. So, okay, we'll just see how it goes. Okay, it starts out, "This is a true story," in all caps. Okay, if you have to qualify it by, like, promising me it's a true story, Patrick, all right, I believe you, buddy. It happened in 1969 on the Lachapuka Hunting Clubs in South Alabama. I hope I said that right. Lachapuka Hunting Club. One of my first hunting trips when I was 10 was with my dad at a hunting club in South Alabama. We were stand hunting, so everyone was dropped at their designated stands about 50 yards apart. It was around 5 o'clock and still dark when I was dropped off on an old logging road. With a small flashlight, I walked down the logging road into the woods, looking for a nice place to sit and wait for light. About a quarter mile in, I walked up on a massive oak tree that had to be at least 16 foot around. I laid my model 1100 Remington across the tree, sat and leaned back. Somehow I must have drifted off and fell asleep. I woke up just as daylight was breaking with something tugging at my leg. I opened my eyes to see a massive wild boar sow pulling on my pant leg with little piglets running all around her. Needless to say, I was scared to death. I was afraid to go for my gun because I would have to turn my whole body to reach it leaning against the tree and top it off. And to top it off, I needed to pee really bad. After I couldn't hold it any longer, I decided to scream and hopefully run its babies off. Patrick. All right. With a silent count of three, I threw my hands up and screamed, "Hey!" Well, it worked, and a little too well. The hogs took off and scattered, and little to my knowledge, there was a flock of turkeys in that big old tree. And when I screamed, it startled them. The sky opened up with a sound of flapping wings and a downpour of turkey. And a downpour of turkey crap covering me with stinky white goo. Patrick, how do you get yourself into these things? Stuck at my stand with no way of anyone possibly knowing what just endured, I decided to make the best of a bad situation. With my current stand covered in turkey poop, I found a log next to a pine thicket and settled in. I could hear them letting the dogs loose and hollering as they pushed through the bottom. My Remington was rested in my lap when something to my right caught my eye. A six-point was moving fast and saw me at about the same time I saw him. I grabbed the shotgun and started firing, all hell breaking loose. Saplings falling and smoke everywhere, I emptied the gun. After all the shooting stopped, there was two pine tree saplings blown in half and three empty buckshot shells. Around 10:30, I heard the horn blowing on the truck that went around picking everyone up at their stands. When I got picked up, I told my dad everything, and he and the other guys got a good laugh. Two stands down from me, a guy got a nice buck. Come to find out, he never fired a shot. It was running and just dropped dead. I hit it with one piece of buckshot in the lungs, and it traveled a couple hundred yards before dying. After that, I always enjoyed fishing a lot more. Yeah, I imagine you probably do. Your hunting experience is covered in poop. It is tugging at your pants while you're sleeping, and is somebody else finding a deer that you... Yeah, I would imagine that you enjoy fishing a lot more. Patrick, it is always a pleasure chatting with you and certainly reading these stories. So thanks. Thanks a lot for that. I should have known that was going to be what it was, which was like grade A shenanigans. Okay. And final story is from my brother, Nicholas Lewis, who I affectionately still call Nicky. He will always be Nicky to me. So Nicky has sent me a message, and it is a story from when we were kids, a fishing story. So Nicky's story goes like this. This is a memory that goes back to when I was just a kid with my older sister and her friend Sam. Ashley and Sam were up all night talking about this creek that they had found while riding horses deep in the logging roads earlier that day, and they actually spotted a fish in the creek. This was an awesome discovery, long overdue. We could always have high hopes to scratch out a fish in our little creek right behind our house, but we never had any luck. So when I heard they'd found a creek with fish, I had to go with. So the planning began. We took off early the very next morning on horses with our fishing rods, worms, and some cream soda. You know, just the essentials. That's true. I was about cream soda back in the day. We were all so excited to finally be on our way to this uncharted creek. As time goes by, I'm thinking to myself, we are so far away from home right now. I'm so glad I'm not alone because I would get myself lost. Ashley and Sam were experts, in my opinion, of the logging roads, and they had been on this quest to find a fishing hole for a long time now. That's so nice. Nikki, thank you. Expert. Aw. So a few more cream sodas later, we arrive at the creek, and sure enough, you can see these huge monster fish swimming around. We all jump off of our horses to find the closest tree to tie up on and start rigging our poles. So we got our lines in the water and admire all of these fish. They were just everywhere. We went from a creek with nothing to fish heaven. None of us came back empty-handed that day. That was my first fishing trip with my sister, and we all had a blast. Oh, Nick, I remember that. That was such a good time. And what, you're so good to me, because this is all a 100% true story. And something that also happened in the story is that the fish were not the freshest fish that you would ever hope to find. I would say that they were somewhere later in their journey of spawning. And I remember the fish that I had. So, okay, let's just paint the picture. Nick, you did a great job. And the piece where we all came back empty-handed that day, and it was a great fishing trip, all true. So let's just form the picture together. So you have three kids. We're talking like, I think Nick, we were what, 12? And we were 14? I think, yeah. I don't think we could have been much older than that. If anything, maybe a little bit younger. Everyone has a salmon that they found in a creek and a horse. So we didn't have bags. We didn't have backpacks. I think Sam held her salmon all the way home, like horseback, like just like hugged it, held her salmon all the way home. I remember this, I strapped mine to the back of my saddle because I had these ties on it, and I thought it would be the best idea if I just used them to like tie the salmon. Well, I tied it down and it was fine. And then I remember like galloping, as soon as we started galloping, and like I felt like my leg get wet, and I looked down and it's just like spewing eggs. It is just spewing eggs out. And I mean, I had no idea. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I just knew that I love fishing. We found fish. We have a barbecue at home. Let's go get the fish and put them on the barbecue. And so as I'm galloping home and eggs are just pouring out and the fish is slipping out of these ties and it falls on the ground, I have to get up, get the fish again, try to tie it on again. And it's just like slippery and there's like fish goo all over my saddle. And we got all of these fish home, and I don't remember what they tasted like, but I remember like we were like, yeah, let's eat them. And I don't remember any of that. I'm sure probably like anything, like if you put that much work into it, like it doesn't matter, like it's going to taste good because you're hungry and you're a kid and you're excited and you just, it's going to be the best tasting thing you've ever had. And I honestly don't quite remember, but I do remember the ride home like very vividly of like the fish like flopping around while we're riding our horses back. That is so good. And I'm so glad that that's your memories of fishing with me. Maybe we'll wait till next time before we tell them all the times that I told you to try different things out in the woods, because that's what you should do. And we had to call poison control. Anyway, that'll be next week's story time. Thank you, Nikki, Nicholas, Lewis. I appreciate you taking the time to write that up so that I could share it. That's super awesome. And again, if any of these stories remind you of a time before that you went fishing or hunting and shenanigans ensued or something amazing happened, please feel free to send it up to me. Email me or send it to me through Instagram, Badash Outdoors, or Facebook, Badash Outdoors, or like I said, email ash@badashfishing.com. And I would love to, you know, read those and share those around. And thank you for sending photos, and all of the folks that responded to my Facebook post earlier with their stories. Super cool. So next segment here, I want to talk about, I dub every week that I do a podcast. Notice how I said every week that I do a podcast, a king salmon or queen salmon of the week, and just share something really positive. And share about the amazing things that people do in the name of fishing, hunting, or conservation, or just for humanity or whatever. And this week, I want to dedicate the king salmon, dubbed all of the first responders, nurses, healthcare workers, and all of the folks that are working their tails off so that we can stay home and be safe. My cousin is a nurse, so gotta make a special shout out to Rochelle, who I know is working tirelessly at the hospital right now. Thank you for everything that you do and will do over the coming weeks as we go through this pandemic that is the coronavirus. And for all of you at home who, I mean, whether you have a fishing or hunting story or not, please share with me how you're dealing with quarantine and time at home and with your family and how you're getting through. And are you, you know, finally cooking up the salmon in the freezer or, you know, trying out new recipes or getting gear ready? Whatever you're doing, I would love to hear how you are getting through it. So feel free to comment, tag me and those things, share them with me. I would love to hear about it, and then maybe share it on with others if that's what we all decide to do. So with that, thanks for hanging around for this week's podcast. Please share it, review it, and for now, I disembark, and we'll see you next week.